Today, on Rainbow Country, LGBT perspectives, a round table chat. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style, right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Rainbow Country may use words or phrases not suitable for all audiences. No matter who you are.
Hi, this is Carol Pope.
No matter what you do.
This is City Councilor Kristen Wong Tan.
We all have a story to tell. And it starts right here on this gay radio show. We lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this continuing journey through Rainbow Country. As I like to call it, a little gay radio show that helps give voice to the LGBT community. As always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. Get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Mark Tara Music. Honestly, it's the best way to keep up to date with all things Rainbow Country. Who's coming up on a particular episode, who's coming up on a particular month, that sort of thing. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Spotify. As I like to say, it's all about choice, right? It's all about choice. Don't forget, everything is hooked up through my website, including the archives, as of today, 102 episodes. MarkTara.com, MarkTara.com. So this is episode, like I just said, 102. This is my season 3 kickoff episode. It's also my CIUT Spring Membership Drive episode. So here's the deal. Here at CIUT, we are member supported and have been for over 30 years. So if you like what we're doing here at Rainbow Country, if you like what we do here at CIUT 89.5 FM, I encourage you to make a donation to the station. Head over to CIUT.FM where you can make a secure online donation. CIUT.FM. So, this is episode 102. This is my season 3 kickoff episode. Kind of exciting. 2 hours now. This episode is titled LGBT Perspectives, a Roundtable Chat, featuring gender fluid activist and from Pride Toronto Board, Louis Molnar, musician Patricia Wilson, playwright Brad Fraser, jazz artist Audie Braun from York Pride, Jacob Gal. I will say, listener discretion is definitely advised, honey, for this particular episode, this particular conversation that we're about to have. So my friends, strap in. But before I let you go, I've just been handed a little piece of paper. I have some people to thank because they've donated to CIUT and to Rainbow Country. Hello. They like what we're doing. Gary, thank you so much. Carol and David, those are the three that I know of right now. The online stuff will come later. I personally don't know that particular information right now. So to those three donors, thank you so much. Heartfelt thank you. My friends, this journey through Rainbow Country begins right now.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country on CIUT 89.5 FM.
So I am joined in studio by a panel of very talented individuals who represent various aspects of the LGBT community. Playwright Brad Fraser.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent.
Gender fluid community advocate and a Pride board member, Louis Molnar.
It's a pleasure to be around these beautiful people.
How are you doing?
Doing quite well, actually.
I love
feeling
your,
good.
I like your pearls.
Yeah, it's a statement.
Musician Patricia Wilson, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. You know, living the fucking dream.
From York Region Pride, Jacob Gall.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Jacob, you sound like you're in the corner.
No, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Jacob, you sound like you're in the closet. What the hell?
No. I'm not in the closet anymore.
Jazz artist Audie Braun.
It's einfach wunderbar to be back here.
First of all, everyone, welcome. Thank you for being part of this crazy little experiment, doing this round table here. I'm hoping it's going to be a continuing thing where, you know, people will come and go and get different perspectives, different personalities, that sort of thing. Feel free to speak your mind. Don't hold back. I really wanted to do this so that we can talk freely, we can talk openly, we can talk respectfully with each other. But let's go around the table and let's get to know what's going on with everyone more so recently. And Audie Braun, let's start with yourself. You have a new record out called Moderne Frau.
That's pretty good.
Not bad, girl. Not bad. How's the response been to your jazz record?
Well, I shouldn't say surprisingly, it's been a wonderful response. I've had some more or less traditional recordings out, but I've never tackled Weimar Berlin before, and a CD that's half German, half English. How would a Canadian audience respond? Well, interestingly, people actually don't really care what language you're singing in. It's not always that important to understand every single word. It's more the vibe, the mood. Do you have something that affects people? And so the response has been great.
Was du heute kannst besorgen, das verschiebe nicht auf morgen. Denn man weiß ja nicht, wohin das führt. Ja, ich bin ein flottes Mädchen, spinne nicht wie's Faustsche Gretchen, bin heroisch und gar nie geniert. Ich habe einen tollen Job, schmink mich nicht, bin ganz salopp. Denn man weiß ja nicht, was das ja soll. Ich find mir jetzt selbst nen Mann, der mich hier berühren kann, bin emanzipiert und find das toll. Ja, die moderne Frau weiß, was sie will und ganz genau. Ja, die moderne Frau gefällt mir sehr. Ja, die moderne Frau weiß, was sie will und ganz genau. Ja, so eine Frau nicht ordinär.
From York Region Pride, Jacob Gall. Jacob Gall, what can we expect from York Region Pride in 2018?
So York Pride's actually had quite the development this year. Since moving the festival a little bit more north to the in the region, we expanded about 700% of our audience, and the participation went up about that much. And we've got a number of activities that we're working on to do a really fun, interactive Pride Festival this year. But as we also approach our 20-year anniversary, we're working on our strategy plan on what we want to see in our 9 municipalities and how we want to see Pride grow in the 905 region.
And musician Patricia Wilson, what's been going on with you?
Not much.
Living the dream?
No, you know, I'm collaborating on a book with David Bateman. We received a grant from the OAC to work on the poetry book, where we kind of do a dance back and forth with poetry. I send him one, he sends me one, we go back and forth. So that's in the works. Yeah, and, you know, I'm doing a lot of acoustical writing. Going to try and put out another record.
Just look out.
buddies getting ready for Pride. It's a shit show there, trying to fit everything onto the schedule. Everybody's working hard.
What's it like at Buddy's during Pride weekend specifically? What's that place like?
It's a shit show. I mean, it's the lineups. Brad lives right close by, are sometimes almost twice around the building to get in. Yeah. And it's nonstop. But the one thing that makes Buddy's great at Pride, you can be some little kid from Scarborough that gets beat up at breakfast by their dad because they're so queer, and then come on their own and feel safe the whole time they're there. And our security is there to make sure people are safe. So that's what it's like. It's a safe spot with lots of shit going on. Lots of art, lots of fun.
So Louis Molnar, give us a little bit of insight in regards to what we can expect from Pride Toronto in 2018.
Oh, Pride Toronto, that's going to be great. We listen to the community and actually focusing a little bit more on community-related organizations here. But also, we have expanded the footprint itself for Pride festivities, and we're also doing a lot more electronic payment systems and just overall increasing the footprint and activities.
And Pride is going down to Dundas Street, right? On Church?
It is. Dundas? Absolutely is. Yeah, we're excited. We're going to have Brandy, the artist, on to head up the stage there.
Yeah, on Dundas Square.
Mm-hmm.
But from on Church Street down all the way down to Dundas, that's all going to be closed off, right?
Right. It's going to be barricaded and that sort of thing. Yeah. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yay.
And more family-friendly activities, too. That's really important. And the theme this year is HIV/AIDS and the ongoing challenges that we have and struggles with the virus, and also culminating in a memorial march. And so the color that we're going to be wearing during it is black in helping to remember them.
Mm.
Yeah.
And Brad Fraser, what have you been up to lately?
I just got back from India. I was in Mumbai. I'm working on a film called The Boyfriend that's based on a famous gay Indian novel written by Raj Rao. And I've done a couple drafts, and so they flew me to Mumbai, and I toured the Dharavi slums, and I went to the best places in town, and I saw the dogs, the cats, the rats, the bats, the amazing architecture, and the astounding level of life that we have no idea of here in Canada. And also got to explore, let's say, gay India, which is very different than what we have here, and made me very aware of how lucky and privileged we are with the freedoms that we enjoy, and just how even a country as democratic, if you want to say that, and advanced as India, still is very very backwards and very repressed when it comes to a lot of queer and gay rights.
It's India that recognizes trans people, isn't it, as a third gender?
As a third gender, the hijab. But again, that's very problematic. It's not like they're being invited into your house and given lots of money. They're seen as kind of a freak that you have to pay to make them go away. So,
but you also can get a blessing from them.
Yes, especially at a wedding. It's a very big deal if a hijab blesses your wedding, and they're sought out to do that. But that's India. It's such a weird place. On one hand, it is so squalid and horrible, and the inequality is just unbelievable. And on the other level, it's like this wonderful, advanced, intelligent, artistic world as well. So those, you know, those extremities lying side by side are really very exciting to be in.
Yeah.
Real yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What did you say, Patricia?
I said a real yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So first of all, thank you guys for being here. I wanted to put together this first panel so we can talk about some issues that are affecting the LGBT community, in particular the case on alleged serial killer Bruce MacArthur. And let's hear from police headquarters.
As you know, on January the 18th, Bruce MacArthur was arrested and charged with two counts of first-degree murder in relation to the deaths of Salim Essen and Andrew Kinsman. Since then, we have continued our investigation, including searches of numerous properties associated to Mr. MacArthur, a review of material evidence and interviews with dozens of people, many of whom have come forward to us. I do want to offer some clarity on the intersection between Projects Houston, PRISM, and the homicide cases. We know the community has been and continues to be deeply concerned about these past investigations, specifically the seriousness with which we looked at these cases. Houston, which ran from November of 2012 until April of 2014, identified three missing persons from the gay village and took thorough steps to try and locate 40-year-old Skanda Navaratnam, who was last seen on September 6, 2010 in the area of Church and Wellesley, 42-year-old Abdul Basir Faizi, otherwise known as Basir, who was reported missing to Pure Regional Police on December 29th of 2010. He was last seen in the area of Church and Wellesley. And 58-year-old Majid Kahan, also known as Hamid, who was last seen on October 14th, 2012, and was known to frequent the area of Church and Wellesley. At the conclusion of the project, no evidence was found which would classify anyone as a suspect in any criminal offense relating to the disappearances. On August the 14th last year, Project PRISM was formed specifically to investigate the disappearances of Andrew Kinsman and Salim Essen. The project team includes members of Project Houston. Although Project PRISM's focus was not to reinvestigate the three earlier missing men, the investigators were certainly cognizant and mindful of the occurrences. In September of 2017, Mr. Bruce MacArthur was identified by Project PRISM investigators as someone to be included or excluded as being involved in the disappearance of Andrew Kinsman. Further steps were taken between September and January of 2018 to investigate Mr. MacArthur. Public safety was always our top priority. On Wednesday, January the 17th, investigators uncovered evidence which provided them with grounds to believe that Mr. MacArthur was not only responsible for the death of Andrew Kinsman, but was also responsible for the death of Mr. Essen. Further evidence was uncovered, which led investigators to believe that Mr. MacArthur was responsible for the deaths of other unidentified victims. On Thursday, January the 18th, Mr. MacArthur was arrested by members of Project PRISM. He was charged with two counts of first-degree murder in relation to Mr. Kinsman and Mr. Essen. Today, he has been charged with seven counts of first-degree murder in relation to the deaths of Salim Essen, Andrew Kinsman, Sarush Mahmoodi, Dean Lisowick, Majid Kahan, Skanda Navaratnam, and Abdul Basir Faizi. One of the focuses of the investigation has been on human remains found within planters from Mallory Crescent. I have previously stated that the remains of at least seven individuals have been located within these planters. The remains of Andrew Kinsman, Sarush Mahmoodi, Skanda Navaratnam, Salim Essen, Dean Lisowick, and Abdul Basir Faizi had previously been identified. One set of remains had been unidentified. I can now report that the remains have been identified as Kirushna Kumar Kanagaratnam. Mr. Kanagaratnam arrived in Canada in 2010 from Sri Lanka and lived in the Scarborough area of Toronto. He was not on file as missing, and we have no prior evidence which would link him to the gay village. We believe that Mr. Kanagaratnam was murdered between the time period of September 3rd to December 14th, 2015. Mr. Kanagaratnam was born in 1978 and would have been 37 years old at the time of his murder. Mr. Kanagaratnam is the male depicted in the previously released John Doe photograph. The identification was confirmed with assistance from an international government agency. Today, Mr. MacArthur was brought back before the courts. He was charged with first-degree murder in relation to Mr. Kanagaratnam. Bruce MacArthur is now charged with and alleged to have committed eight murders. I really want to take the time today to acknowledge the work of the officers on Project PRISM. We knew that eventually they would get the job done and would identify this eighth victim. The stress and anxiety over dealing with hundreds of tips, hundreds of missing person occurrences, and dozens of potential identifications for the eighth victim has been enormous. While we are saddened, we are also tremendously proud and relieved to have been able to bring closure to the friends and family of Mr. Kanagaratnam and the seven other victims. I want to thank those who have come forward with their tips. If anyone has not heard from us or they have information related to Mr. MacArthur, please call us at the Homicide Squad or anonymously through Crime Stoppers.
So that's the latest, where everything stands right now. Brad Fraser, you wrote a play titled Unidentified Human Remains and the True Nature of Love. What are your thoughts on what you just heard from Toronto Police?
I mean, it's not surprising, and I've sort of been down this road a number of times in a number of different cities. The truth is that when you live in an oppressed minority, and it's also a transitory minority, that people come back and forth a lot. People disappear, people go away, they come back, sometimes they never come back. And for me, that's always been a really fascinating thing, because so many of us as queer people lose our family, and we have to build a new family. And those people who don't build that new family, I'm often very concerned about them. I often write about them. That's where really the impulse for Unidentified Human Remains came from, based on a very famous murder of a young woman in Edmonton. But the point is, I think that we have always been preyed upon, gay men, trans people, lesbians, I mean, anybody with any kind of vulnerability. And in this case, many of these men were from a visual minority. Mm-hmm. You could tell they were from a different minority. Yeah. They were middle-aged men. And, you know, one of the first things I think probably all of us learn when we come into a big city is that all this wonderful stuff we have going on, the clubs and the bars and the friends and the streets and the restaurants, come with a price. And that price is often that we're hunted. And we are definitely hunted by predators, whether it's a rapist, whether it's a gay basher, whether it's a murderer, whatever it is. One of the first lessons every queer person learns is to be as wary as you possibly can. But of course, we also live in a community where violence can be fetishized, where things that are scary become very sexy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But there are times when that line can be very hard to define. And so on one hand, I sort of feel like I understand why the cops are hesitant to make any assumptions about what this is. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I've dealt with cops in gay areas in Toronto and Toronto's Village, and I know how they treat us generally. And I think that we have a lot of questions that we have to ask of the police.
Mm-hmm. Audie Braun, what are your thoughts on this whole crazy case?
So when I was prepping for this wonderful round table discussion opportunity, I looked at that very topic and I thought, oh, God. And then you start with that, right? It's something that I've pushed out of my life a little bit because I just find it so incredibly disturbing. And because there are so many disturbing things, you know how you can selectively just ignore something. But I thought about it. And two things sort of stick out for me after having listened to the police report. One is just sort of this casual remark that Person X, the supposed eighth victim, had not been reported missing, right? So that is, I'm freaking dumbfounded. What does that mean? And then in the same breath, he says, but now we're so happy that the family and friends have closure. So WTF, did he not have family and friends? What kind of a world do we live
not
in?
Actually, here. They thought he was hiding for a political reason because of the country he's from. Yeah. So they were actually afraid
so
to look for him.
So he was maybe a refugee? Oh.
Yeah.
He was a refugee.
Okay. So, but okay, that is very informing, and but still quite sad because that explains how he would have lived his life.
Yeah.
And the other thing is something that you just mentioned, and I wonder whether we'll all talk about this, and maybe you can illuminate me on this, is exactly how did the police not react in ways that people now say they should have reacted? And you're talking about being preyed upon. And I think one can stand to reason to say that gay men in particular, and in this case you listen to the sound of their last names, so they are of Middle Eastern-ish background.
South Asian. Yes.
They're South Asian. There's some trend there too. What did not happen? I've been hearing from friends and from people who are more educated in this, on this topic, that the police did not take it seriously enough. So
go ahead, Louis.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's interesting because I think there's a full culture of denial within the police services as well as the city itself.
Mm-hmm.
It was in early December that I spoke with a city council member, not giving gender, not giving name, and not doing all that. But I spoke to the city council member, and they said, when I brought up all the different disappearances, and they said, well, people are making all kinds of connections, and that's ridiculous that they would do that. And I said, I came from a city that had this sort of thing occur, mm-hmm. and this has been an ongoing issue, and I think it should be taken seriously. And I got poo-pooed by this city council member of city council.
I know so. That, and Jacob Gallum, I'm going to get you to weigh in a second, but I know that in 2010, that's when everything sort of happened. That's when three men went missing in Toronto's Gay Village, and Project Houston was launched in 2012 and lasted about 18 months, and nothing ever really came of that. So I don't know if people from the community, people that knew those three individuals, if they ever came forward or not.
Well, I'm sorry. We must remember that the gay community is one of the community's underreported crime.
Okay.
They report mm-hmm. crime to their members, to their businesses, far less than any other community. And that's because of the long-lasting relationship they've had with the police over the years. Mm-hmm. They do not want the police because God knows what they will find, right? They don't want them around. So we are so underreported. Doesn't mean that we should be ignored, but there is the fact that, as Brad said, there's a whole fetish around violence. And with that there and under and the police looking at it as, well, it's within the community and they're not reporting, right?
But Patricia, with everything that you just said, uh-huh. what do you think would make, and I'm going to generalize here, but what do you think would make the LGBT community as a whole feel more comfortable with Toronto police?
Jesus Christ.
Well, maybe if we always had the context of history of our community being over-policed and under-reported, of not being served, of being targeted for sexual crimes, for drug-related crimes. I mean,
baited constantly.
Yes, and we grew up, we grew up literally where when you went out of a club to smoke a joint, there were cops hiding around the corner, specifically waiting to bust you because you were queer. And in those days, if you got a police record, you couldn't travel. It could screw up your job. Yeah, it could do all kinds of things.
Absolutely.
So I think if we're going to talk about all of this stuff, we really have to take in the context of our history with the police and even with what happened with Black Lives Matter and not wanting police to march and that kind of thing that, this is an important part of our community, and that's all I'll say, and we'll leave it to someone else.
Yeah. Jacob Gal, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm really trying to observe just because I'm the youngest one at this table. And
you could be the smartest one, though. Yeah. You never know.
Not necessarily, but I think, coming from York Region and understanding that, there are a number of different scenarios that, I can talk about. I can be talking about, the police interaction with our LGBTQ2S community in York Region, social activities. Where are queer people going in York Region for social activities? 10 chances. One, it's downtown Toronto. There's always been a north-south divide. Where, go back 60 years, people were not openly queer in the community, and they would go down to Toronto to seek refuge, right, and socialize downtown. And they're then dealing with all those problems downtown. You look at a police service that if, you don't have establishments like queer spaces or businesses or service providers like ACYR, which is the AIDS Committee of York Region, or our local Pride organization, or My House Rainbow Resources. I mean, if those things weren't around 60 years ago in York Region, and the police aren't having to interact with that at a York Regional police level, for instance, technically there's really no history, whereas in Toronto, they have that police history where, at the time, society looks down at you and, the police then react in that manner, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not to say that, queer people didn't exist in York Region, because that's not true. And I'm sure there were dozens and, you know, hundreds of cases of people getting involved with the police in a bad way in York Region. So I think when we look at community engagement from our police services, like Toronto to York are extremely different. I mean, York Region police have been working for the last, like, 20-plus years on building relationships in York Region. And when you look at Project Marie in Toronto, where you have, you know, men who are being tricked by police officers, you know, you have individuals that are taking part in sexual engagements in public, which are not allowed, but there is a component to education versus, like, you know, when police go and they pretend to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's called entrapment.
Exactly. The thing is, why are they not going out with flyers saying, you can't be doing this, you shouldn't be doing this? Instead, they're tricking people.
From a legal standpoint, it's total misrepresentation, right?
Well,
none of that, but who exactly are we protecting? I mean, most gay guys who are having sex, not exclusively, but in the outdoors, in parks, are doing it at night. Now, if you're out with your family at 11 o'clock at night running through the bushes, I'm going to ask what you're up to. I don't need you asking me what I'm up to. It should be quite obvious.
Well, living in the sticks, and I mean, York Region is not that far away from York Region, from Toronto, but I mean, everyone goes to bed at 10. There's no nightlife, right? So I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a level of context when you look at, like, you know, who's out in the bushes and whatnot. And I mean, we could talk about that for a lot,
right?
But I mean, at the end of the day, community education and how you police a community. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, York Regional Police, for instance, look at it from a point where it's engaging, not necessarily enforcing, constantly working on that connection, right? So, I mean, I've never lived in Toronto, so, but I definitely socialize in Toronto, and there's a very big difference in the vibe that I see.
How you see it?
I mean, York Regional Police officers are, I mean, YRP are working on a lot of things to engage with the community in various ways that work mm-hmm. on that piece. But, you know, I don't necessarily see that in Toronto. When you look at such a dense population, it's extremely hard to get to know everyone. Whereas, like, you know, York Region, you've got 9 municipalities. It's very rural. You have police officers that are constantly engaging in public spaces. They're coming out. They're talking. They're out of their cruisers. They're getting to know you. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a really big...
Maybe we can learn, Toronto Police can learn something from that.
Well, I mean, the thing
getting out more into the community might be a really good start, maybe even more so than they have been.
I'm going to say this because I'll forget this. But we have to remember we're talking about what's going on in the bushes, you know, and families in bushes, and the police, you know, entrapment. It is not just the fucking police department that are keeping the gay men out of the bushes. There are neighbors. I live right near Cawthon Park, which used to, when I moved to Toronto, was the biggest cruising area in the city. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, I could walk through that park at 4 in the morning, completely safe. There was nobody to bother me. There was lots of, you know, stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was completely safe to those who did not want to participate. The neighbors, community centers, individuals who could not wrap their head around what queer means, what gay meant, which is, you know, indiscriminate sex for some, decided to turn that park into something where gay men could not function with indiscriminate sex. And I can tell you now, without that activity in that park, that is one of the most dangerous parks in the city right now. But with the men in there, it was so safe. You could go 4 o'clock in the morning and talk to the guys while they were waiting. Now, it's a fucking mess.
It's sketchy.
While they're waiting.
Well, yeah.
So while you're in line.
That's a great
point. I love your shoes.
Patricia, that
but
is
that
a great point.
The cops, right?
Yeah. I also want to mention that, you know, it's very important to remember that people that have sex in parks or, you know, engage in whatever activities are not necessarily doing it because of a fetish thing. A lot of people are in the closet, and the only time that they can't go out to clubs because they may meet, you know, somebody from work or church or whatever. And so the anonymity is very important, and that exists today. It certainly existed back then, you know, and you know, to speak about the Bruce MacArthur thing with the police, you know, the first thing that one of the police captains did was to blame the community. Mm-hmm. When we said, hey, why weren't the police doing something? They said, hey, wait a minute. It was the community that was at fault. Yeah. Hmm. And but, we were the ones putting posters up of these people. Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, that was like when AIDS came out in the 80s. They used it. It was completely homophobic, this whole Bruce MacArthur thing. The guy was a fucking killer.
Yeah.
Whether he's fucking gay
alleged.
Or not. Jack.
Alleged killer.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Okay, thanks. But Jack the Ripper, they only talked about his victims as prostitutes, not as women.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is ongoing. And they used bad gays, using those apps, bad gays. This was so homophobic, so reflective of what they were saying around when AIDS came out in the 80s. You know, it's like
it's
Ronald
it's
Reagan.
Anti-sex. Yeah. It's anti-sex, brutal. And it always has been. And if you look at the history of popular culture and the depiction of gay people in popular culture, they're always either sexual predators or they're sexual victims. But either way, they're in trouble for having sex. And it has been this kind of – straight people do this stuff all the time. Yeah. I've seen as many straight people in our neighborhood having sex in a park as I have gay people. That's honestly true.
I think it's
why they come there.
That's a fact. Yeah.
Church and Wellesley area in the village.
Yeah. My office overlooks the park next to Buddy's. And I could tell you, I see more heterosexual sex in that park than I do gay sex. And it's just so fucking homophobic, this whole thing, the media, everything. I was, you know, he's a fucking killer, everybody.
Like, and you know what? Speaking of homophobia, I'm just going to throw this in because I'm thinking of, okay, famous serial killer. I'm just, my mind is going to Bernardo, right? Mm-hmm. And how outraged collectively we all were because they were young girls and how quickly the police acted. Mm-hmm. There really is, and it's interesting as a woman who identifies as lesbian to be reminded of how much homophobia is centered still on gay male homophobia.
Male sexuality.
You know, and then add to that some racial slurs. Why should people not be outraged in the same manner, right? It's just there is a dichotomy here.
Look, Jeffrey Dahmer killed how many people,
exactly.
How many young men of color? A boy got away from him and was running away, and the cops grabbed the boy and believed Dahmer that he was babysitting this boy and he was having a tantrum and gave him back to Dahmer to eat and kill.
Literally.
That's exactly what happened. And so that's a perfect kind of metaphor for how we've been treated, I think, by the police historically.
You know, it's interesting because my next question to everyone is, has this case affected any of you? And I think it's pretty obvious that in one way, shape, or form, it's definitely affected us all. I know for me, I'm going to tell a bit of a personal story. It's a bizarre story, but anyway, a friend of mine used to live in the same building as Bruce MacArthur. So when this all started happening and that piece of information came out, I bizarrely thought, is my friend going to suddenly turn into a serial killer and come after me now? Bizarre thought, but it's something that happened. It's something that affected me. And just now when we started talking about this, you guys started getting so passionate and emotional. And I'm going to throw out the question, has this case impacted you? And if so, how? And Audie Braun, I'm going to throw it to you. What do you think? Has it impacted you at all?
It's impacting me this very second, more than I thought. On Wednesday, I went to my ENT for just a routine exam, and we were talking about how the world's going down the shitter, basically. You know, it's just like, what are the times we're living in? And this is an esteemed old doctor, and all of a sudden we were talking about Bruce MacArthur, and he said, you know, you wouldn't believe it, and this is how it's affecting people's lives who are not part of the gay community. He said a client of his, an older woman, was deeply upset because the police were digging up her front lawn because her landscaper had been Bruce MacArthur's company, right? So people on the periphery are being dragged into this, and so as a human race, we should all be so incredibly outraged on a number of levels. How can we not be affected by it? And yet there's this blaséness and this comfortability. What do you call it when you become so complacent? Mm-hmm. Because there's so much of it that something that is so centralized and so obviously sexist, homophobic, or whatever, sometimes people just can't go there. But when my ENT tells me about one of his other clients, you think, okay, it's out there.
Yeah.
It's out there.
Brad?
Well, I'm the guy who wrote the play that was What If You Found Out Your Best Friend Was a Serial Killer. So it came very much from exactly what you're talking about. There was a famous murder case that was related to a camping trip I had done with my best friend, and who couldn't have been there and killed her, by the way. But who that was the leap my imagination made. You know, what if he had been the killer? And from there, a play, a movie, all kinds of things were born. So for me, this isn't a kind of a new thing, and I'm never very surprised by it. And it does affect me in that it makes me more angry that things are not different now than they were in 1986. But what it doesn't do, and again, I think this speaks to the homophobia in the press. If you remember, the Globe and Mail had a headline about the village is living in terror and people don't know what. And it was like, what a load of bullshit. We're doing everything we have always done. We may be a little more vigilant. We may say to our friends, do you want me to walk you home or be sure to take a cab or something? Yeah. But we've been living under this kind of thing for so long that if we let it really affect us, we would never go anywhere. We never would do anything. So for me, it's just kind of made me angry more again about the same old bullshit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Just, yeah, you know, and
Patricia,
they went after the apps, the dating thing. It's just like, oh my God. And the media just ate that up.
Yeah.
It was bad gays, bad gays. You know, it just, fuck off, everybody. Like, we've been living our lives this way for a very long time. We have it together. This is a killer. It's not even a gay killer. It's just a killer.
And
stop it.
You know, even if we're out there getting high and fucking all the time, we don't deserve to be killed for it.
No.
It's exactly, that simple.
Right? It's a killer,
There's no defense.
Fuck.
Yeah, there's still this whole idea that we're somehow twisted. And and when you can dehumanize people like that, then you can justify any number of different things, you know, just innumerable. I mean, you make us out to be a boogeyman. I know me personally, when I was growing up, I heard about Dean Corll. I grew up in Houston, Texas. And Dean Corll had killed 28, you know, guys. They were gay people. Same situation. And so this, for me, is particularly striking. It's painful, actually, because this, you know, it was when I was a child. Growing up, we were considered to be subhuman. We also were, you know, just told that we were freaks and we'd never amount to any good. And then it's the same thing again when I'm an adult. And I'm thinking, God, you know, that's 40 years later and we're having the same damn discussion. The hell? You know, it's very upsetting. Incredibly upsetting. I've had to deal with this for 40 years. So,
Jacob Gall, has this case affected you in any way, shape, or form?
I think that something that like upsets me is the fact that, you know, when we look at, you know, whether it's young adults or queer youth or adults in York Region or anywhere beyond Toronto who aren't out to their families, right, and are going down, you know, to Toronto to socialize. You know, they're not necessarily leaving a paper trail. Look at, you know, some of the individuals from Peel, right, who were a part of this murder. And I think, you know, more education, more open. I mean, like, the police are always saying, oh, don't meet people online. Don't, you know, socialize. Don't use apps. But the thing is, like, you can't tell people not to do that, right? Because it's a huge part of our community, because this is where you build your friendships and where you meet people, right? So,
but I will say this, though. With anything, there is a dark side to it,
right,
in regards to online dating apps, that sort of thing.
There's also education. I mean, you know, don't take, you know, candy from strangers, but at the same time, well,
but that's a bit like saying, you know, look over your shoulder to make sure there's not a van coming out at you when you're walking down Yonge Street.
But you can't be
no idea if it's going to happen or not.
No.
And, you know, most of the time it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it was back to what you were saying, Brad, everybody's remarking is that X number of years later, the world that was mad, it seems to be going madder. It's not good English, but this is ostensibly what's happening. And the basic issue is no human being deserves to be treated that way. And I find that, you know, with peripheral people I've been talking with, there's still, you can see in their faces this little, well, you know, what do you expect? I mean, they asked for it.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Excuse me? Would you just repeat that? I'm this is incredulous, right?
Yeah, but that is not just something that's confined to the right wing or the straight world or something.
No.
I mean, if you remember the Charlie Hebdo thing and the murders that happened there were people on the left who said they deserved to die because they were making fun of religion and honestly believed it. Yeah. So I don't know that when push comes to shove and we start to deconstruct everything, that our community, the majority of our community, is not that much different than any other community in terms of if it's not happening to me, I don't really care.
But that's why it's a human issue. That's why it – I mean, it's incredible that it's centered in the gay community, but it is such a huge humanistic issue, right?
Well, we also tend to distance ourselves from other people if we tend to be more conservative in our personal lives. Those of us that are LGBTQI who are church-going, you know, more conservative, you know, just kind of the only difference is that, you know, you have same-sex partners, then we tend to distance ourselves and also separate ourselves and say the same exact things as everybody else. And we do it in our own community to our own people. Mm-hmm. And that's something that needs to change.
Here, here.
Well said, Louis Molnar. Yeah. On that note, let's take a break.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
So I want to talk about one word in particular and get my panel's opinion, thoughts, insights into this one particular word, originally meaning strange, peculiar. In the 19th century, it started being used in a negative way when it came to homosexuality. In the late 80s, activists began to reclaim this word to assert an identity distinct from the gay identity. Queer. I recently did an interview with a great lesbian couple, Ivana and Jackie. Jackie is lesbian, and Ivana is bisexual, but she chooses to use the word queer. But instead of me telling her story, let's hear a little clip from that interview. You use the word Ivana, queer, rather than bisexual. Talk to me about that. Why specifically that word?
So on her, it gives you a couple options in terms of what to put your gender preference as. And it gives you that you can choose that you are a bisexual, a lesbian, questioning, a whole bunch of other words. Mm-hmm. However, I did not want to put the word bisexual because I don't want someone to look at my profile, say, oh, this girl's pretty cute. Oh, she's bisexual. We're just going to get rid of her right away. I'd rather not be judged just based on a single word. So I put the word queer as that umbrella term. Mm-hmm. And if someone was genuinely interested in talking to me or getting to know me, then we can bring up that topic and we can bring up that discussion of, yeah, I'm bisexual.
So you're saying that bisexual people tend to get more, especially in the lesbian world, more rejection?
There's more of a ranking.
Than the word queer?
Yes, I would think so. Like, I would say queer has more power than bisexual in the lesbian terms.
It's accepted more?
It's accepted more. If you identify as queer, it puts you in umbrella terms, but it also doesn't pinpoint you into controversy.
But it doesn't pinpoint you, but it makes your sexuality vague.
It's ambiguous.
It's a very ambiguous. Great word.
Yes.
Is that a good thing? Is that a healthy thing? Because it almost seems as if the word queer, people are using it not to own their own sexuality. Do you know what I'm saying?
I prefer ambiguity over prejudice.
I find that interesting.
Yeah.
You guys are laughing. Yeah. What's going on?
First of all, I would like to know how old. Yeah. That's exactly. The very first thing I wanted. And no offense. I know.
Well, no, if you're not being judged for queer.
Hold on a second. Who's asking the question?
Patricia. It's an attitude that
A younger couple.
I had myself when I was that age. I'm identifying with those statements because when I was younger, it was that same thing. But as you know, as the tire tracks across my back grew, and I got to be this age, and that's why I'm laughing. I'm not. It's just like, oh my God, this could have been me.
Oh my God.
How many years ago, when I first came out of as whatever the fuck I am, right? Because I had so many things to come out as, right?
Back when you gave a fuck.
So I wasn't judging the thing as queer. It's just like, oh my God.
Well, I think being the youngest one here, just a quick insert. I mean, if you don't get judged for one thing, you'll get judged for another. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really,
But what's the panel? Exactly. But what I want to get at is the use of the word as an umbrella term rather than saying, I'm gay, lesbian, I'm bisexual. I found it interesting that Ivana chooses to use the word queer. Because she doesn't want backlash.
As defense. It's a personal defense from the world rather than engagement demanding acceptance.
And if she's doing that, that there are other people that are using the word in the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think that Louis Molnar, what are your thoughts?
I think queer, we started adding so many letters. When I was growing up, it was gay and lesbian. Mm-hmm. Then it turned into lesbian, gay, and then it was lesbian, gay, LGBT, you know, bi, trans. So,
and then it's, Q it's just, meant questioning at one point.
Yeah, well, and then it's so, you and know, it's gone does. To so many letters, and now it's got numbers, a couple of numbers in there, and
it's
you know,
too much.
I just it is, and so there, I think people are just looking for one word that will encapsulate all of
everything.
That. Unfortunately, I have to tell you on a personal level, I think about every time I was called queer as a kid and with, you know, red faces, rage-filled faces that were like almost, you know, just crying tears because they were so full of hatred for me. And this is just for so many of us in this community, that is literally the very last word that was heard, you know, in their ears before they were killed. You know, before they were raped, before they were taken, incarcerated, you know, beaten with pipes, whatever. And so I think about that. When I think about that word, that's what it is. And so I don't know that there is a word, you know, that would encapsulate all that. I personally, I don't like queer. I just don't like it. But, you know, if it empowers others and makes somebody feel good, I don't know.
I know personally I can take or leave the word. I don't not like it. I just find it interesting that maybe people are using it not to own who they are. Brad Fraser, what are your thoughts?
You know, I get so tired of this bullshit. I really do. It's interesting. If you look at it hysterically and outside of the academic use of the word queer, which actually gives me a stroke because everybody's queer in academia.
Exactly.
If you, you know, thought about someone of the same sex sort of when you masturbated once, you decide you're queer. Historically, you know, the word gay was a very important word. The word was a gay, the word gay was one that we all agreed on, that would cover us, that seemed to work very well, whether you were male, female, trans, whatever it was at the time. And the word queer actually became, really became into use when ACT UP started using it. And people started using it as a word of defiance, as we're queer, we're here, and we're not going anywhere. You can call us whatever you want to. You can't hurt us. But then after the AIDS crisis subsided and we got all these people who were obsessed with gay marriage and integrating, all of a sudden it wasn't just gay and queer and lesbian. It was bi, it was trans, it was questioning, it was two-spirit. It was like, it's just sex. We have sex with people of the same sex. How complicated is that? Why do we need all these terms? And in, to my mind, it's a bit like when we went from the early cable universe where we would all get together and we would watch a show about a black family in a sitcom one night, and then we'd watch a show about a Hispanic family, and then we'd watch one about a white family. But then all of a sudden, the Hispanic people had their own channel, and the black people had their own channel, and the gay people had their own channel. And all it's really done is compartmentalize us further and further and further. And I think keep us apart from one another rather than bringing us together.
Absolutely.
And the thing that really drives me crazy about Pride was when we stopped having a Pride parade, and now we had to have a lesbian parade, and then we had to have a trans parade, and then all of a sudden all of us people who were marching together and having such a good time and being this unified force became all these little groups who were fighting with each other for recognition.
Yeah,
and I think it actually, as and, you know, you can laugh at me when I say this, but I think it's part of the whole neoliberal program to keep oppressed people from coming together and from fighting the conglomerate of the majority by keeping us fighting with one another. I think it's one of the most negative things that's ever happened to our community, and I think it's one of the most negative things that can happen to any community. I'm okay with gay. I'm okay with queer. I'm okay with lesbian. Everyone else, you fall under that somewhere. Deal with it.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, the word queer, and I think what you said is so true. The word queer for me, it's different for me because at Buddy's, queer, all of a sudden, everybody is
queer.
I'm doing queer theater. Well, are you queer? No, but my idea of theater is queer.
It's like, a queer idea.
Yeah,
oh,
so that,
goodness.
you know what I'm talking about? All
yes,
of a sudden,
absolutely.
The word queer is no longer a word that represents us truly. Because now, it all of a sudden, it represents an artist that is nowhere near our community, but they're using that word to get inroads into into our community.
Without having fought the battle. Yeah, without having gone through the struggle of actually being queer and being defiant. Now it becomes something you learn at school. So you can come in and I'm going to queer this Shakespeare. I'm going to queer this or I'm going to queer that. It's using the term deconstruction doesn't mean shit if you don't know how something is constructed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't be queer if you've never been gay.
I'll tell you this, Jacob. Yeah. You know, you must be having such a ball over here because, you know, you got a bunch of warriors over here that have lots of stripes. You know, we shed a lot of blood for our this movement, for our community, every single one
equality.
Of us. Equality. All of it. And we're still doing it, a lot of us.
I think Jacob, he sweats it out. He works hard, and the only reason you're an activist is because you see what the potential for danger is.
I see what segregation is, I see what homophobia is.
But the thing though is the younger generation, they're using this word, case in point, with Ivana as a way to almost mask who they are. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a healthy thing or a what thing. And that's why I want to talk about this because
they're using it without education is really what they're doing.
No skin in the game. Cool. No skin in the game at all.
I'd be interested to hear what our lesbian has to say about this.
Mm-hmm. Adi?
So when I first came out, I had a very hard time using the L word. So for me, it felt safe just to say I'm gay. Sort of like that, right? I'm good. So that's where I lived for a really, really long time. And then you know, there is a sense of pride and soul-searching and self-acceptance is a huge one. It's so interesting what you said, Brad, the fact that we are so segregated within our own community. Mm-hmm. Segregation is a bad word, but diversity, the pendant, is actually a good word. So I think it is wonderful that maybe if this young woman feels great to say queer, great, let's just let it be. Let's just let it be without hammering it to death. But there is a danger that with these little groups that we are growing further and further and further apart. Mm-hmm. And then, we're all going to live in our own little channel, in our own little channeled world. There's an over-identification then. With what? With what? It's just like you say. We all live, we breathe, we have sex, or we don't.
What's funny is that when I came out in the late 70s, it was actually cool to be bisexual.
Right.
So us gay people who still were not quite really committed were often bisexual for a year or two and often genuinely bisexual. No. I had girlfriends and I had sex with women before I realized, mostly this is what I'm into, so I'm going to say I'm gay. But it almost feels like queer has become this generation's version of what bisexual was, and they're afraid of bisexual because it seems stigmatized and because people feel it's
dishonest,
but they would rather say queer. Whereas 40 years ago, you would never say I'm queer, but you were very safe saying I'm bi.
Well, I think, too, that your thing about the group being separating and language around it, I got to tell you, the trans community is fucked around words. They are so fucked. Yeah.
Thank you, Patricia Wilson.
Wow. I grew up with the word tranny, which was accepted and proud and still amongst people of my age. And I actually, because I use that word, I had somebody tell me, you being trans doesn't count anymore because you're not what trans is. So this is not, and that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. And maybe they're right. I think I might come out as non-trans.
But you know, we're confusing things.
Go ahead.
Wasn't it the writer Andre Gide who said that homosexual is actually an adjective? It's not really a noun, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So then you're saying, so if we examine all these words, transsexual, non-binary, they're all different aspects of being human, right? Mm-hmm.
The challenge is, in the work sphere, I found, as a businessman, that when you have a populist attitude in the workspace, with all this open concept floors, then it's not clear who's in charge on a very, very basic human level. And that translates. And so what happens is you start getting people, you know, in this tribal mentality, mm-hmm. and that's what it is, this tribalism. Mm-hmm. And so they start doing that even more. The more equal you make people, and for better or worse, that's what it is, you know, and that's just us as people. So then you start getting people start looking for labels and things like that, a way to set themselves up and apart and kind of demean in a certain way other people. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and that's I think that's tied to us, the end of the AIDS crisis, that we had a single monolithic enemy we mm-hmm. all had mm-hmm. to fight in right. order to survive. And so this stuff wasn't important. But once that happened and once that thing was yeah. defeated and once we had that taste of freedom and we were a tribe – then it started to break into who are the smaller tribes mm-hmm. within the tribes, which and I think is the exact opposite of yeah. what pride and is supposed to be
exactly.
about.
Exactly. And yeah. we're, I mean, we're chewing – I'm going to speak about the trans community just because
it's your
I'm
aisle.
Trans. It's my fucking
it's
aisle.
Your lane.
It's my fucking thing.
That's right.
Yeah, that's my aisle. Is that it's the language, and we're chewing our own paws off mm-hmm. over little tiny things yeah. instead of being one – thing. The AIDS community united mm-hmm. the gay community. Mm-hmm. And that it's a terrible way to get united. But as you said, once that boogeyman was gone, everybody started looking around, and language is so important in separating groups.
Yeah.
It is so crazy. And
Now, saying that, and if I could just jump in here with yeah. this, you know, we also have to take into account, and we have all been in this point at some, in this space at some point, when you are an oppressed minority who is not allowed to air their voice, when you finally find the power to air your voice, and the gay community certainly did this in the 70s and the early 80s, you can be quite militaristic yeah. about how you want to be treated and how you want to be addressed and that kind of thing. And I think that's a completely natural yeah. reaction. So I think, for example, trans people within the larger gay community were silenced for a very yeah. long time and were marginalized. And so this defiance that you have when you get that power is very important. And I think something that has to be exercised. But we also have to understand that there comes a point where you don't have to do that anymore, where we got the message, and if we can get your pronoun right, we will get your pronoun right. And if we don't, you don't have to yell at me. You just right. have to tell me what yeah. you prefer.
Yeah. But so look what they just did in theater for the Dora Awards.
Right.
They're not going to have a gender award.
Right.
Right? Right. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no gender for the awards. Like, there are steps being fucking made here.
Mm-hmm.
Quit poking each other's eyes out, thinking you've made your statement. People are listening. I really think people are listening.
Maybe we should bring up, and I don't know whether you were going to bring this up too, but since we are talking about these various groups, language, right? And I'm aware of this because I also teach, and I have a few young students who have come out as non-binary and have educated me, really. But in terms of language, I think it needs to be more flexible if we're going to survive this boom of diversity. He, she, them, they. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny and you can laugh about it, and it is kind of amusing to a certain point. But it gets to the point where there are some people who are very sensitive about that, and maybe we should, those of us who are not used to using more gender fluid, or should we just develop new language? Because a lot of people I've talked to say that, for example, them, they wouldn't really suit either because it is a pluralistic word and it doesn't really explain the individual's plight. What can be done so that people are not offended so easily and that people are respect more? I think it has to do with maybe changing languages yeah. and who's at the helm. Schools, again, families. That is always the root, is education.
Pronouns. I'd be interested to know what Jacob says yeah, about that, being yeah. a new generation.
Right out of absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
To be honest, I mean, running and facilitating a youth group up in Newmarket, probably not as different as running a group in Toronto, but we have youth from the ages of 12 to 24.
Wow. Right?
So you can imagine programming for that age range mm-hmm. can be extremely hard. And, you know, the group is mainly for social activities. But, I mean, I'm hearing ZZ and, like, Z. a bunch of, like,
wow.
Z. And mm-hmm. I can't keep up. I mean, doing activism for the last 5 years, I've just focused on bringing visibility to York Region. Language was never a part of my education as mm-hmm. a queer activist. Yeah. So, really, I'm trying to catch up, but at the same time, I'm trying to encourage these youth to just claim space, respect each other, build respect with the community, but don't isolate yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when we look at equity clubs and GSAs or, you know, your gender sexual alliance, I mean, you know, 10 chances to one, you're there and you're not engaging with the public, right? Because mm-hmm. you're in your own corner and you're doing your own thing. You know, with, you know, our group, we're inviting the public out. We're going out into the public. We're mm-hmm. claiming space, right? So, I mean, I don't know. I can't keep up sometimes with the youth, and I sometimes think it gets a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah. I think mm-hmm. the key word is respect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think, wow. when did gay pride become just pride?
And I can answer that for
you.
It's
been neutered.
I can answer that for you, and I can answer where the big turnaround was, and it's a very simple thing. Corporatism yeah. is when gay pride became pride. They as soon as we got out. Corporate sponsors, as soon as we had the approval mm. of the corporations yeah. around us, oh my God, the beer company's going to sponsor it and they're going to give us a float and look at the telephone company's going to do something and someone else is going to do something.
But drop the gay.
Yeah, drop the gay yep. and include everyone. And wow. I always thought, why the fuck should we include everyone? This is a gay pride celebration. It is for people who are in a sexual minority. Yep. It's not for everyone. Everyone else has the world. They have all kinds of things to celebrate. They have Christmas and weddings and all that, anniversaries and bullshit that they can do. We had yeah. something day. That was for us to make people recognize who we are mm-hmm. and to acknowledge that we actually existed. And the day it stopped being that and it stopped yeah. being a display of defiance and pride, it became a big party where a lot of drunk straight people show up and kind of make a mess out of the neighborhood, yeah. frankly.
And girl, you're on fire.
You're right. You're absolutely right. That's the time when Buddy's float stopped.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the complaints that we got on our floats of
S&M and leather. S&M, and,
you know, yeah. we mm-hmm. back then, that we were just a bunch of kids in Doc Martens and leather
yeah.
putting
yeah.
on theater. And our dungeons, you know, we would have, Brad knows, if you've been there, you know, whipping people on crucifixes, that was part of the show.
Yep.
But that got shut down because exactly – the corporate sponsors. And we had, just even 3 years ago, we had to change a brochure because of TD.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. yeah.
So we sold our soul. Mm. We sold our soul. And we sold the soul of our community so we could let those people in, so we could have what?
Acceptance.
That acceptance from the straight world, from the straight business world, who has mm-hmm. always exploited mm-hmm. us for our money anyway?
Yeah, you know what we need, Brad? We need a march called Take Back the Pride.
Yeah.
Honestly?
Yeah.
Well, I think what we need is episodes like this where someone like Brad Fraser tells it like it is and schools us, because I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
When definitely. Gay pride lost the gay because of basically corporate money.
And here I thought York Region was doing it right. Just, you know, we have a pride parade and it's just one parade and that's it. And everyone comes out. But it's not gay pride. It's just pride parade. So I thought we had it right. But
right. Well, I mean, again, not to get hung up on semantics for the word gay. Yeah, yeah. Although, you know.
But it should be
gay or
pride.
Queer are sort of the only two things that right. cover it for everybody of every persuasion, of
right.
every
right.
gender, of every
absolutely.
Whatever.
Yeah, and what I found very often, and, you know, we've had this debate internally in several different pride organizations I've been part of, is the fact that when we start including people, and this goes back to, you know, the clubs, the gay clubs, Church Street stuff, okay, and not disallowing, but certainly not encouraging straight people to get into our clubs. These are our safe spaces. And very often what will happen is you get straight people that will come in, and they'll treat us like we're entertainment. And mm-hmm. they tokenize us. And they say, oh, but I've also got a gay friend or my cousin's gay. Well, I don't care about your cousin. And you get out. Don't talk to me yeah. like that. Treat me
well,
like that.
If you want to follow up with that, just talk to one drag queen
oh,
in
yes.
a bar that has bachelorette parties or whatever. It's,
oh,
it's a
God.
Major problem that they have no – a lot of these girls, not all of them – have no boundaries
none
with the performers.
Yeah, and again, I think not to defend that kind of behavior, but in the case of women, for example, where you go out into the club district and you are constantly being hit on by men and you are constantly mm-hmm. have this predatory behavior going on, whether you want it or not, those women come into the club and they feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm
they,
not,
they feel yeah. like they're not yeah. going to be have to worry about any of those things. But the problem is they feel so safe that they forget they're a yeah. guest in someone yeah. else's neighborhood.
Yeah. World.
And they start to, in someone else's world, and they start to co-opt it for their own purposes.
Oh, honey, I was I just at no cruise the other day girls. And yeah. some girl jumps on the stage while the queen's performing.
I know.
I'm thinking know. Like, oh my gosh.
I hope that yeah, queen kicked her ass off the stage.
Oh, she did really quickly, but like,
out
you know.
The window.
But I have no problem with straight women in my bar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad they're safe. It's I want people to be safe, not just queer, yeah. but I want good manners. I don't
yes.
I don't go to the Bovine and start going down on my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a, you know. A humorous aside is that I never went to a bar as a before I came out, and then I used to go to this place called on Hayden Street. Well, it was just Chez Moi.
Chez Moi.
And yeah, it was yeah, my first visit there, and I get hit on by a man, right? So you never expect or think that to happen. And it's funny because I'm laughing about it now, but I was told, oh, no, 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 this guy, he's notorious, and he often comes here to get lesbians into his apartment. And there was this fabulous dyke who said to me, look, you're just with me right now. I'm going to take you under my wing. So this was like a crash course in human behavior and everything. And I think to myself, how did I not know that this guy was actually maybe possibly killing people in his apartment? Who you just never know. You just never know.
Although
right?
you'd never find a producer that interesting.
Oh.
So everyone, we basically have come to the – I feel – So everyone,
are you gonna cry?
No, but we've come, girl. We've come to the end of the damn show.
Oh. Well, you know what this means. This means a part two has to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Louis Molnar, how can people find you online? All that sort of good stuff.
Twitter and Facebook. You can look at me at L I Molnar. Last name L I M is a Michael. O L N is a Nancy. A R. I'm pretty much everywhere under that one. But I'm all over social media. Certainly, you can also look up. I would encourage people if you're autistic and LGBTQI to look
Twainbow.
Up twainbow.org. That's like Mark Twainbow. And also check out all the fun we're having in Toronto for Pride. You're going to love it.
Brad Fraser?
You can find me at bradfraser.net. You can find me on my Facebook page, although there is a waiting list. But if you friend me, I will get you in there as soon as I can. On Twitter at Brad Fraser, and of course in Any Gutter on a Friday or Saturday night after midnight.
Any Gutter, is that a new social app or something?
Audie Braun.
That's right.
Well, naturally the website is audiebraun.com. I'll just spell it. It's AdiBraun.com. I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and drop by, say hi, and I will friend you.
Jacob Gal, how can people find you online?
Facebook, it's Jacob Montgomery Gal.
Patricia Wilson, are you online?
Well, Facebook, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm on Facebook. And so you can find me on Facebook. And Crack Puppies on Facebook, my band, that's there. Mm-hmm. And I think...
And Crack Puppies on Twitter, too. Crack Puppy.
Yes, I think it's Crack Puppy Rocks.
And can't you be found in Buddies 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week?
Yes, please come and do some shots with me.
Yes.
You know, I'm known for that, actually. You know, that...
I've been doing shots with Patricia for 30 years.
And I am very happy of that.
Me too.
Yeah.
On that note, everyone, thank you so much. Thanks for being
here. Lovely
Mark. Thank you.
Tara.
Thank you.
Understand why you had to leave, but the Hey, this is Paul Bellini, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 on your FM dial.
Everyone, you're listening to Rainbow Country, CIUT's gay radio show, helping to give voice to the LGBT community. And this is my season 3 kickoff episode. The show's now 2 hours long. And this episode was LGBT perspectives. And I hope to have this be an ongoing thing where various individuals representing different aspects of the LGBT community get together to talk about things that are, you know, on our mind in pop culture, that sort of thing. Don't forget, get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. That'll be me, Mark Tara. FYI, if you listen to the show, you might know this answer, but honey, what's my name backwards? Grammarat. That's all I'll say. My email address, mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, and on Spotify. Don't forget, everything is hooked up at my website, including all of the archives as of today, 102 episodes. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi guys, this is Mika Barnes. Very happy to be with you on CIUT 89.5 FM.